Today's guest, Eric Jermstedt, Vice President Product Management at Experian Automotive.
I mean, most consumers view EVs as tech, as you're buying a phone that you drive, basically, right? You're not buying a vehicle anymore. But the reality is, when is a tech company going to come along and completely change it? Who's going to come out with this vehicle that gets you the same value that you're driving at a fraction of the cost, or with technology that works better? The other thing that could boost things more quickly is, and what I think the only thing right now that it could be is really the government. And what are they going to do to almost force it?
Tech Talk, the automotive aftermarket podcast.
Hi and welcome to the next episode of our Tech Talk aftermarket podcast. Today we are getting nerdy again, talking about data. Eric is a real expert of the matter, and Experian is a massive company dealing with all sorts of data. We discuss their automotive, or specifically their aftermarket business. We talk about VIO data, because that's the field where we have a strong partnership with Experian. The differences of all the markets they serve. We talk about hiring and how to get the right people for all those data-related jobs in the industry. The exponential increase of data through topics like e-commerce or in-vehicle data. We make some predictions on the effect of big tech stepping into the automotive industry, and try to outline how data can support sustainability in the future. So, as you heard, we've covered a lot of ground there today. Many insights on the data topic, fantastic and highly knowledgeable guests. So without further ado, let's jump right into the podcast. Hi and welcome to our Tech Talk aftermarket podcast here live from Apex in Las Vegas. We have our next guest, Eric. Hi, Eric. Thanks for taking the time to joining us here.
You bet. Glad to be here.
And could you give us or our audience a little introduction about yourself? So who you are, what you are doing, and what Experian is doing as a company?
Sure. So yeah, thanks for having me. I work for Experian Automotive, based here in the U.S. I've been with the company for going on 16 years. So started kind of data analytics is my background primarily. Working now with a focus mostly in the product part of the organization, heading up one of our analytics teams in the Experian Automotive business specifically, as well as oversee different product categories, including marketing, as well as statistics, which is the VIO products that you're aware of, and statistics, new vehicle registrations, customer loyalty, things like that.
So you're really a numbers guy.
I am 100% a numbers guy. That is my background through and through.
Nice. And Experian, how did it start for them? Have they been active in the automotive sector from the beginning? Because as I understood, you also have a lot of services for insurance companies and credit scoring services. So how did it evolve?
Yeah, the automotive business has been around certainly longer than I have. I believe going back to the late 90s. Experian globally is a massive company. I mean, we've got 18,000 employees worldwide, between 5.5 and 6 billion in revenue every year. We're in 44 countries. The largest being the UK, Brazil, and then obviously the US here is our largest market. But really, I mean, Experian is, you know, here in North America and the US specifically, people think of us as a credit bureau, a credit agency, one of the three big bureaus here in the United States. We're so much more than that globally. And even here in the US, I mean, our core, our mission as a company is to really just try and create a better tomorrow with data and technology and solutions. So that goes from, you know, helping consumers to boost their credit scores, do everything from a financial inclusion perspective, and then just helping, you know, B2B side really minimize risk. And that goes across, you know, credit, automotive. We're heavily engaged in the healthcare industry as well, and then fraud and identity and prevention there as well. So, and those services and offerings kind of go globally as well. So, a lot of that relates to what we're doing here in the U.S., but also globally, we've got a lot of offerings that are very similar to that.
Yes, very broad field you're operating in. And in your automotive pillar, so you don't only serve the aftermarket, but also car manufacturers?
Yeah, so the way that we're kind of set up and the way that we're organized in the automotive business is sort of, you think of it kind of as a matrix. So we've got four kind of key product areas that we have, one being marketing, which we'll get into a little bit later, I think.
Yeah.
Statistics that I kind of mentioned, which is, you know, new vehicle registrations, customer loyalty, vehicles in operation. The third product area is kind of the lending side, which gets into the credit reporting, you know, profile reports. Anytime someone goes and tries to buy a vehicle or needs financing, they check their credit score. We're in the background of that. And then finally, vehicle history, which gets into, you know, everything that's happening down to a VIN level specifically for that car. So you take those kind of four core product areas, and then what we do is we layer those across the entire automotive ecosystem. So we work with not only the aftermarket that we're here to talk about, but also the OEMs, the manufacturers themselves, the lenders, the auctions, dealers throughout the entire ecosystem. So those products really go kind of across the entire automotive ecosystem.
Yes, and especially for the aftermarket or the manufacturers, VIO data is very important. And this is also where we are partnering, so Experience and Experian and Tech Alliance. So what would you say makes good VIO data? Because I guess this is like a product which is sometimes a bit overlooked, you know, because it's not a sexy product. It's like it's statistics of vehicles driving around, you know?
It's funny, I always give the analogy to people that you don't really ever hear good job. A janitor doesn't ever really hear good job.
Yeah.
They just hear when, you know, the bathroom's not clean anymore, the kitchen's a mess, or those types of things. That's kind of the way the VIO data is kind of looked at, but there's so much that goes into it that has to be done right. Otherwise, you start getting all the questions, you have all the problems that come along with it. So it's, you know, for us at Experian, you know, we have access to so many different data assets, and that's what makes our offering so powerful, because it's not just where are the vehicles located, but getting them into those locations is critically important. And the data that we have that really drives that goes across not only automotive, but you think about the different data sources we have, things like credit information, things like dealer data, vehicle history information, all these things that allow us to make sure that we're putting the right vehicles into the right households, so that when, you know, a dealer or you know, a parts manufacturer or even an OEM is counting how many vehicles are in this area, we've got them garaged and placed into the right spot. And there's a lot of data nuance that goes into that, especially as you think about our data sources coming from the states. You know, 50 states here, plus we get Puerto Rico, some Canadian data, partnering with Tech Alliance on some of the Mexico data. And it's not just coming in from one place. It's coming in from all these places. It's different what you get from the state of Kansas versus the state of Virginia. And those nuances are tricky, to say the least.
And what makes VIO data, what makes good VIO data? Because I know how the data is getting sourced, because we are also doing it with our team in the Netherlands. But there's no single source of truth, because, as you said, there's so many different sources you need to take into account when calculating the VIO data. So what makes a good VIO data?
Well, I mean, there's two things. It's and this is one of the things I always talk with my analytics teams about, is it's accuracy and coverage. If you have great accuracy but low coverage, you know, you're great in a small area. Vice versa, let's say you have everything but you're only right 50% of the time, that's not helpful either. So those two things, it really becomes the intersection of those. So it's how much coverage can you get with the highest level of accuracy? And so for us at Experian, I mean, we're ingesting data daily. We're running it through cleansing, through hygiene, all of those things to make sure that it's as accurate as possible. The beauty of the data specifically in the United States is, you know, and our having been in this business for as long as we have access to virtually everything. I won't say 100% because, I mean, you know, of course it's 99.9 or whatever it ends up being. But you know, because of our data sources, our coverage is really high. The challenge becomes, you know, what if there's inaccurate data from a certain source or there's timeliness issues with it? We supplement and do things with different data sources to make it as accurate as possible.
Yes. And your data team or the team who's working in the automotive sector, is it because you are serving all these different industries? Is it that you bring the teams also together and maybe you invented something for a product in the insurance sector, but you could use this stuff also for other industries?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an interesting point. You know, we've done things taking the VIO data as an example. This is a good example. We've worked with our healthcare business. Mm-hmm. This is sort of a tangent here, but you know, we've worked with them in the past. They're trying to help, you know, hospitals, insurance providers, and they're building products to help make sure that consumers have access to healthcare.
Yeah.
Part of that access is how do you go get your prescription medications? How do you get to your doctor's appointments?
Yeah.
Do you have a vehicle? Is a natural extension of that. So we take some of this data, you know, to your point, and you know, it's great for understanding what's happening, you know, specifically with parts and where they're located and how do you, you know, the logistics around all of those things. But what's great is now we're starting to find other uses for that data, one of them being in the healthcare sector that truly does help consumers make sure they have access to health.
Yes,
healthcare.
Definitely. And in your opinion, how differs the North American market from Europe, or maybe when you go down south from Mexico, as you mentioned?
Yeah, it's really interesting as we talk about, you know, our business and where we need to be, where are we going. You know, the data differences in terms of what's available in the U.S. versus Canada versus Puerto Rico, Mexico. Then you throw Europe into the mix. We've done some things in the U.K. off and on. And really the differences are data availability, permissibility, and what attributes kind of come along with that. So there's certain areas where it's a lot easier to get at where that vehicle is garaged today. So the specific consumer information tied to that record. In certain cases and in certain places, even within the U.S., it's not as simple as a one-size-fits-all. There's certain states where you can use data for you know, different purposes. So taking a plate and converting that license plate into a full VIN is not something that you can do in every state in the U.S. There's a ton of different regulations like that. When you then take that and flip it even a level higher and say, what does it look like in Canada, for example? Completely different. What does it look like in Europe? Completely different. So as we have our conversations kind of globally, it really becomes a question of making sure we understand what data we have access to sort of in the U.S. versus what's available there, the permissible uses of it, and the compliance and the legalities around it really becomes...
Yes, legislation is different.
Oh, yeah, the legislation is huge. That is one of the first things that always comes up. It's, yeah, we have the data, but no, we can't use it for that purpose. Yeah.
And for all this analyzing of your data, so the big topics in the data industry and in general are now automation. Do you use any smart algorithms or machine learning techniques?
Yeah, all over the place, actually. Specifically in the marketing space, you know, one of my groups is doing a fantastic job building in AI machine learning into our algorithms to keep getting better, to keep getting smarter. Especially you talk about telematics data and how nasty and just hard to decipher the way it comes in.
No.
You know, we keep getting smarter, you know, across the industry. Though that area specifically is an area where we got to keep pushing forward because that data is kind of a mess. A couple of the other places where we use some machine learning is you talk about dealer information and lender information, specifically around how that information is reported to us. So you think about the name of a dealer being, you know, John Smith Ford.
Yeah.
Maybe next time it comes in, it just says Smith Ford. The next time it's John Ford.
Yeah.
All at the same address. How do you standardize all of that? So we've got, you know, machine learning that we're starting to build into things like that to make sure that the accuracy of our reporting is is as good as it can be.
And you mentioned it before, and when I was doing my research, I saw that you're always also offering a lot of marketing-related services. So, and I understood it that it's kind of a ROI calculation for marketing campaigns, but also like proper or to have like a more correct user targeting. How does that work?
Oh, we have so many things we're doing in the marketing
because
space.
You know me as like a marketing executive. There's always the answer, yeah. But what's my return for all that money?
Yeah, you know, the measurement, the ROI specifically on marketing is a tricky one. And everyone tries to answer that question in a way that paints the best picture for whatever their goal is, right? So is it the advertiser? Is it the platform? Are you working with an agency? Everyone has a bias.
Yeah.
They want it to paint the right picture for what they're trying to accomplish. So in the case of an advertising agency, they want their advertising to work. So when it doesn't work, they blame the data and, you know, so on and so forth. Yeah. So you get this push and pull that happens kind of across the board. The beauty of what we do is we try and remain as neutral as possible in that process. So that's part of kind of our mantra as a business is, you know, integrity and transparency in our data, how we come up with what we're doing. You know, obviously we talked a little bit about machine learning. Some of those things we're going to say, keep that a little closer to the vest just because, you know, we're not going to tell you how we make the sauce.
Yeah.
But as it relates to the ROI component, there's a couple different ways that we look at this. You know, one is when you're dealing with clients and partners that are trying to sell vehicles, we have solutions that say, here is exactly what's sold in the entire marketplace based on who and the consumers you were talking to. That one's pretty straightforward. You sent out, you know, 10,000 mail pieces or 10,000 emails or served up, you know, 2 million impressions online. Here's how many vehicle sales were attributed back to those. We don't try and make any claims about it was the first impression, the last impression, specifically what drove that. We just say, look, here is what we know to have happened. Interpret that as you see fit. It gets trickier as you talk about parts, service, and all of those things, because it's not as simple as we have, you know, virtually every sale that happens in the United States. We don't have that on the service side. The service market is so fragmented. You've got, you know, franchise dealers, independent repair shops, DIYers. So how do you measure the effectiveness there? And that's where you can start to get creative with the data. So you take in the VIO data in conjunction with the consumers that you were in contact with, and then you match in some of the service data for whoever the partner is you're working with and say, what's our penetration there? How well did it actually work? So there's ways to get there. It's not as straightforward as it is on the sales side. So on the sales side, we then start adding in, what did you spend on the data? How much did how many impressions did you serve? What was the cost? It's easier to measure there. The service side, it's just not quite as easy because the measurement piece, the actual action, is a little bit trickier to know.
Yes, definitely. And I can imagine that this service is in quite high demand. Or is there always like an internal fight at your customers with marketing against, I don't know, other department?
You know, it's interesting. There's certain clients we work with who have, it's very centralized. They're all on the same page. Others, it's very interesting because we're having to sell them solutions so that they can prove to the rest of their business that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
That to me is always, I always just chuckle a little bit where I'm going, and we're selling insights to a company so that they can sell themselves internally.
Yeah.
It's a weird dynamic. It's strange.
And to do all your offerings, I guess you need very highly qualified people. And I talked with Anna from Schaeffler about it as well. As we all know, I mean, even in Europe, it's very, very difficult to get like IT people, be it developers, and I guess analytics people are even more scarce. So how do you handle it in the US where you also have to compete with all these big tech platforms?
You know, it's interesting. It's such a good question, Christian. The Again, my background is data and analytics. Yeah. So I've been doing this for a long time. And you would think that it'd be, as time has gone on and the way the industry has moved and just with technology and software, that it would be easier to find these kinds of people now. And it's still a little challenging depending on, you know, what the skill set is we're looking for. We've had a lot of really great success working with local universities, getting partnerships there, talking with IT groups at universities,
yep.
as well as we've had good success internally because we have so many BI tools, identifying people within our own business that have a keen eye for data, for analytics. I've got a resource on my analytics team who came from actually the account management, the sales side. He worked kind of on the side in terms of getting that background in data and analytics. And his skill set is fantastic because he doesn't just bring the book knowledge, the data, but he also brings the client side to it.
Yeah.
So finding things like that have been very helpful, and we've had some success there.
Definitely. And you also mentioned the sales data. Now, through the rise of the e-commerce and all these e-commerce players, for you this is like the new Wild West, because there's so many data coming. Because when you sell something online in e-commerce shop or wherever, it is recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a flood of new data coming in for you.
Yeah, and the challenge for us has always been, how do we get, it's the two things. It's the volume of data and the accuracy of it.
No.
So, I mean, you look around here at Apex and there are so many different companies here with so much data. That's my reason for being here is meeting with these companies and figuring out how can we partner together to both get, you know, the most value out of our data resources. And it's tricky. Had a conversation a little while ago with someone who was excited about all the data they had. They had something like 10,000 records, and I'm sitting here going, that's really great for your business. For us, we got to scale. We got to go get more. So it's very fragmented, especially as it relates to the parts industry and the aftermarket in that side of the world. But obviously COVID changed everything. On the dealer side and everywhere in terms of how people do business online, how you market to consumers differently. And that space is changing and dynamic every day.
And how do you think the overall sentiment in the US towards e-commerce, or especially towards the big players like eBay, Amazon, getting into the parts business, or maybe also Walmart, because there's a big Walmart booth here as well? So they're also trying to cut out their share of the aftermarket money.
They are, and it's very interesting. So our business, again, I'm in our automotive business. We've got, you know, experience, got, I don't know the number in North America, we'd have to count, but call it 9 or 10 different businesses that exist in the U.S., one of those being marketing services. So we've had longstanding relationships with, you mentioned Walmart, Amazon, and eBay, outside of the auto industry. Now what we're seeing
For you, it's brilliant. You know, who would have thought like 10 years ago that you can sell bio data to Amazon?
Correct. So now all of a sudden we've got, through our other business units here in the U.S., them approaching us and saying, look, we're working with Amazon. They're getting into the auto space. What can we do to help solve that problem for them? So for us, you know, we've been, you know, well positioned there. For the rest of the industry.
For you, it's the more the merrier.
Yeah. For us, it really is. Again, because we're trying to provide that transparent ease of data access to the industry. All of a sudden you've got someone like Amazon there who's, you know, doing different things. For us, it's more of the same almost.
Yes. And you mentioned the telematics data, the in-vehicle data before. So what's the current state on telematics data in the US? Because for us, or for me, coming from Europe, and I was involved in our company Caruso, who's dealing with the in-vehicle data there, I can imagine it's different in the US, or at least I know, because in Europe we have like a Caruso set up as an open marketplace, and we get access to, like, I guess now it's 14 different brands or 15 different brands. harmonized in-vehicle data.
That must be nice.
Yes. So how is it over here? Because for
it's
you,
not like that.
This is really, it's really valuable data because it affects so many of your businesses. For insurance companies, very interesting.
Everything.
You have a lot of use cases for that in Europe.
Everything. And it's more challenging to get access to here. I mean, very, very frankly, it's like a lot of these other things. It's kind of fragmented in terms of who you're working with, what they're willing to work with you on. And really our goal is to form strategic partnerships on this. The more data, specifically on the vehicle history side, the more information we can get to a consumer about the history of that vehicle, telematics data plays a huge role in that.
Yeah.
And so from that perspective, we want to get access to as much of it as possible to make the buying as transparent for the consumer as possible. The other use cases, you can see it plugging into our products, our offerings, go across the board from VIO data to loyalty and how does what's happening to a vehicle impact a consumer's propensity to buy that vehicle again, that same brand from that same dealer. All of those measurement type related exercises, that telematics data can feed into all of that. The interesting part about the telematics world, I think back to conferences, 8, 10, 12 years ago, talking about getting access to telematics data. And I think generally speaking at the time, and this has changed a little bit, but all of the providers were trying to figure out how to monetize that data. I don't know that they've figured it out yet. I think
that's the thing. We were also fighting in Europe because everyone always wanted access to all the data immediately.
Sure.
But you can have all the data if you don't have like a proper use case or a service you can build for your customer.
Yeah. And the really interesting one is, I forget who it was we talked to. This was years and years ago. But it was, they were trying to sell the technology, not the data.
Mm-hmm.
So their barrier to entry and to growing their market share in terms of what they had around telematics data was they were trying to monetize technology, not data. And my feedback to them was, get your technology into as many cars as possible.
Yeah.
Forget that. Produce that. Get it as cheap as possible.
So was it a dongle solution or plug-in?
Yeah, it was a plug-in. It was a plug-in deal. And it's like, give your plug-in thing away.
Yeah.
Get it into the
vehicle. Yeah, but you're right. Like 10 years ago, it was like many companies produced these little dongles in China and trying to sell them for like €100, $100 to their customers.
Nobody's going
to
buy it. Give it away. Give it away. You'll go sell the data five, six, seven, eight times.
It's not your business. You don't want to be a dongle seller.
No.
You want to be a data company.
Yeah. And it's interesting because they're tech people running those companies, but you go, give away your technology, get it out there, get your reach, and then go sell the data six, seven times.
Yeah. No.
Interesting.
Definitely. And another topic which is around in the market or is highly discussed is, of course, the electrification of the car park, the ongoing electrification. How does it affect your business? Because I think especially for VIO data, it's clear, like manufacturers, they want to know how many electric cars are out there. When's the tipping point that we have 50% electrification in the car park?
Going to be a while here in the U.S., certainly. I mean, and we are spending a lot of energy, effort, and resources on electrification, on EVs right now. Just launched a new product called eInsights, specific to the electric industry, providing insights to kind of across the board for us. So it's OEMs, it's aftermarket, it's dealers, lenders, everyone, to basically say, here is what's happening as it relates to EVs. We're consistently pumping more data into that product. The interesting part, I mean, here in the U.S., there's 285 or so million vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
That's the number here. The electric vehicles, I mean, for as much as you hear about it, they don't even represent 1% of that yet.
Yeah.
It's somewhere around, half a percent, maybe a little bit more than that. And so you talk about how long until that really takes off and gets going. And, our infrastructure here relative to what you all have in Europe is nothing. I mean, we're behind as it relates to infrastructure. I don't believe we've been very intelligent about it. That sounds wrong, but I mean, we've not put the intelligence into the infrastructure here the way that you all have kind of in Europe. So, you know, as an example, I don't like anecdotal things, especially as a data guy, but we took a trip, my family and I'm in Lincoln, Nebraska. So smack in the middle of the country. We took a trip up to northern Wisconsin this last summer, and I remember driving through the middle of Iowa. You know, you're in the middle of farmland. Nowhere, yeah. You're kind of in the middle of nowhere, and we pulled off to get gas, and here's this gas station with I don't know how many plug-in stations at this gas station. I mean, there were like 10 or 20 of them, and I'm just sitting here going, we have data that could have helped you guys a little bit better than... And I don't know where the funding came from or why someone decided to put all these here, but I'm going, this is just not right. And so it's things like that. I think there's still a general fear in the U.S. of how far can I go? Mm-hmm. What can I actually do with this vehicle relative to, I know I can go get gas every 5 miles, you know, at worst.
And I think this issue or topic is more valid in the US where the ways are longer, but we have the same issue in Europe as well. If you ask the people,
really,
are you satisfied with 500 kilometers of range? No, that's not enough. And then, but you know, when you keep asking them, how often do you drive even more than 20 kilometers? And then it's like twice a year when they go on holiday or something.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a strange conversation. It's the exact same thing here. But here, I think the even bigger problem is, you know, lack of infrastructure, or at least the perceived lack of infrastructure. We've gone through the exercises. We've got them in our tools to say, if you want to drive across the entire country from California to New York, here's how you get it done.
Yeah.
So it's possible. But what I'm curious to see is where things go in the future as it relates to the technology in the vehicles, specifically around the batteries, and who are the new players there that are going to come into the market? I've been saying this. I'm wrong.
When do we see the Apple car?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is when is a tech company going to buy someone that exists, completely transform it, and turn it into? I mean, most consumers view EVs as tech. As you're not buying, you're buying a phone that you drive, basically, right? You're not buying a vehicle anymore.
Don't say that to your car manufacturer customers.
No, but
that they will be device makers in the future.
But the reality is, when is a tech company going to come along and completely change it? And I think there's two things that could drastically shift what happens here in the U.S. One of them is that you hit the nail on the head. I think is really when does Apple, Amazon, you mentioned eBay earlier. Maybe it's eBay. Who's going to come out with this vehicle that gets you the same value that you're driving at a fraction of the cost or with technology that works better? I think that's number one. I think number two, the other thing that could boost things more quickly is, and what it, I think the only thing right now that it could be is really the government. And what are they going to do to almost force it? And
like they did in Europe. Right?
Yeah. So I've looked pretty closely at what they did. I think it was in Sweden and it wasn't incentivizing the purchase of an EV. It was basically penalizing, if you bought an ICE vehicle. And you look at we looked specifically, I think it was like a Nissan Leaf or no, it was a Volkswagen. It was a VW, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it was cost to purchase. They had basically put so much into the cost of purchasing a non-EV that you were incentivized to buy the electric vehicle, but you weren't. Here, what we've done so far is we've added incentives on top of the electric vehicle purchase.
Yeah,
that's only going to get you so far. What they kind of did the other way was they decentivized. You know, they made it less advantageous to buy the other, and I think that probably had a lot to do with it. You would know more about that probably than I would based on the few things that I've read.
No, but definitely, and I agree, it will be interesting when the first of the big tech players is making making their move, because currently it seems like an Apple is also not denying that they're working on a car. So I guess it's a pretty sure bet that they're working on something. As we see with Google, they are more or like going the way they do with their smartphone approach. So they're working on an operating system.
Sure.
They have this Waymo cars, and maybe they follow the same approach. Then they will have Waymo as like a more or less open source platform, and you can put it in any device, like in any car. And maybe Apple will have like two or three models which are more in the upper luxury segment or whatever.
Yeah, and the interesting one, I think another thing that could help this really take off is the battery. As soon as the battery becomes manageable, and I mean manageable and literally in terms of physical size and weight, if all of a sudden I can unplug a battery, plug in one that's already charged, my fear of not being able to drive is gone. I don't know how far away I've read a few articles on this recently. It seems like everyone kind of knows what it needs to be, but actually getting it done is going to be, it's going to take some time.
True, but I think then there could be some customers could be a bit resistant to this, because you buy your car and your car comes with your battery.
Yeah.
So you don't go to a gas station and they change your battery.
Know.
Your beautiful, great working battery, and then you get another one. Maybe it's faulty. Maybe how was the guy driving with the battery who had it before?
That's true. I read something else recently that talked about maybe you buy the car but you lease the battery.
Yeah.
Some things like that. I don't know, but it's.
But this is also like a topic which would be quite handy for you and your business, because that's also something we see, like the ownership is declining. So we see more fleet cars, so bigger fleets, so car sharing and stuff, which is also very good for your data business, I guess.
We try and remain, open across the board to all of those things, making sure we're able to serve our customers kind of, across the entire ecosystem. Again, putting a lot of effort and energy into the electric space right now, but also fleet data, all of that information. We make sure we partner with those guys as well to make sure that we know what's going on.
And also a topic which always comes along when you talk about electrification is sustainability.
Sure.
So how can data support the aftermarket being more sustainable in the future?
Oh, that's such a good question. The electrification is the start of it. I think it really has to go beyond just emissions and electric vehicles. It goes in and... This is sort of the Experian approach to sustainability. It's not just environmental, it's social, it's responsibility. It's trying to, again, for us, it's trying to use data to create a better future, a better world. And that goes not just with helping consumers understand what's happening with cars, helping them make better informed decisions, helping them keep their vehicles safe. You know, you've got safety recalls on vehicles, things like that. Helping consumers to understand that's happening as it relates to, sorry, I'm kind of all over the board with my answer here, but it's an important topic.
Yes.
For Experian. We put a ton of emphasis on this. Credit, helping consumers get access to credit so that they can go buy their first house, so that they can, finance a vehicle.
Yeah.
Very important to us. I don't know how much you see our commercials over there in Europe, but with the John Cena purple cow, boost your credit score now with Experian, it's important to us. And to us, that is a part of sustainability. In fact, our North America president today, her name is Jennifer Schultz, she just came out and said, look, we're going to take a day in the next couple weeks here. And our company's always been very big into... volunteer work, taking time away to serve your local communities. We put money and resources into wherever our employees are at, whatever they're doing to help local communities, putting more emphasis on that in the coming weeks ahead. So for us at Experian, sustainability is it's environment, it's people, it's social, it goes across the board. And I think in order for us to continue to take the world in good directions in the future, for me and for us at Experian, it really has to be more than just a vehicle and more than just pollution. It has to be bigger than that. So that's
I really like that you brought up this local aspect, because that's something which is not talked about much when talking about sustainability, and there's so much you can do on a local level.
It's engaging, and this is me personally now, but it's engaging yourself locally with things that matter to you and using your time, your resources for good. And those are the things that start to spread. And, you know, we can give money to national organizations and do all those things. They're not bad. But in order to have, you know, that connectivity, you know, to your local community and just the positive impact you can have there, you know, money's not going to solve that problem. And
yeah,
that's
true.
And that's it's a ground up kind of grassroots mentality.
Great. So now that we're coming to the end of our little session, we always look a bit ahead in the future. So if we would meet at Apex 2030 again, what would be the topics? Will we have like the first Experian John Cena Super Bowl commercial and you measure the ROI with your tools?
I don't think John Cena will have aged even a year by the year 2030. you know, 2030, I think... you're going to see from Experian. I hope that we continue to push from our perspective. You mentioned sustainability, continuing to help our data be used for the right reasons in the market. I hope that we can continue to be a force for good. I would hope to see a relatively decent difference in terms of just looking statistically at the number of vehicles in operation that are now hybrid and electric vehicles. Yeah. And quite frankly, I think our data solutions by then should really match up with what's happening in the marketplace. If we've done our jobs effectively, we're going to move with the market there. And we're going to try and stay at the leading edge, not only with data, but with software and technology to go along with it.
Definitely. So there's a lot of opportunities for Experian in the future. Thank you very much for your time, Eric.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
And I hope we meet earlier than 2030.
I hope so too.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a wrap. I think we got a great understanding on what Eric and Experian are doing. All the possibilities data offers already today for different use cases in the market, and also where things might go next. If you enjoyed this episode as well, feel free to subscribe and give us a positive rating in your podcast app. So long, take care, and bye-bye.